The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we have a special three-hour presentation. Some of you will only be able to hear 1 hour over your land-based terrestrial stations. However, if you have internet access, you can go to GaryKnoll.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, where it will be carried in full. Today we begin the challenge to all things of power. For as long as I have been in the field of health and nutrition and healing, environmental sciences, and being one of hundreds of millions of stewards of the earth, caring about human nature, we have been vilified, marginalized, excluded from any tables of discussion. We have not been considered to have validity on any level. The media has been participant in this, both the left and the right. We have seen our entire body politic controlled in such ways that in any reasonable person's mind, would have them reject the entire political system as having any validity at all. How many times have we heard, well, anyone's better than a Republican, or the Republicans, anyone's better than a liberal? They are both wrong. And the only way I see that we can change anything is over a period of time. It will not come soon. It probably will take 4 to 6 years. But we are going on the offensive. All this time, whether it's one of the foolish quackbusters who have no scientific credibility whatsoever, and court records show they have been discredited as experts, they've been discredited in what they've done, and they've lost all their lawsuits, but still they're quoted by the media. The chairmen of departments of different universities will sit with regularity on boards of major corporations, pharmaceutical industry, insurance industries, fuel industries, banking industries, give them their input, and still go on television as if they're objective and have only the truth as to what will guide them. We have politicians that now openly vie for $1 billion plus to get elected president. It is so shameful. This is worse than the Roman Empire in its final years of decline. We have people who are pseudo-intellects who act as if they're full intellects. We have people who marginalize groups and distort history. Everything is taken out of context. And unfortunately, the real progressives, the innovatives, the sensitives, the creative and dynamic energies that seek peace and solutions, those who've actually shown by action their deeds are sustainable, have not once been given a place at the table. They have been on the defensive. They simply walk each day through some gauntlet and are beaten verbally and excluded. It's now time to challenge these people. We will do so beginning today. I am doing a series of documentaries, the most important of which I have not discussed, nor will I, till it's ready on the day of its premiere. I intend to deconstruct every single institution in the United States. I intend to take on every single institution that exists, that has any power, because they are all perverse. They are all completely totalitarian, and they represent nothing. It represents true democracy, freedom, enlightenment or love, healing or honest hope. Today we are going to begin, and you can assume that every single week I will be doing another step in this journey. The purpose is for those of you who are frustrated, for those of you who have tried different methods and it has not worked, for those of you who put your faith in the Democrats, Republicans, the conservatives, the liberal, the market system of economics, where the suburban sprawl, the answer lies there, you say. No, it does not. We will have insights that you may not have been aware of, and certainly a more honest portrayal of history. Today, my guest in this hour will be Dr. Larry Malerba. He is board certified as a physician, and he's also board certified as a homeopath. And he is clinical assistant professor in the Department of Preventive Medicine at New York Medical College. Our discussion will be on deconstructing assumptions about the scientific validity of conventional medicine. Let me be very clear. Let there be no doubt what I intend to do. I intend from today forward to show that what we call orthodox scientific medicine, the medicine of choice, is a fraud. That it kills more people every year than any other conflict, war, or any disease, or any accident every single year. It causes more injuries, over 10 million per year. It is never held accountable for its losses, its failures. It is bounded by hubris and arrogance, conceit that is unbridled. Donald Trump would look like Mother Teresa compared to the medical paradigm's leaders. We intend to challenge them, but with not ad hominem attacks or personal challenge, but rather a methodical deconstructing using scholarship and facts so that you can have some confidence the information being shared is valid. Later, in our next hour, we will be looking at deconstructing our entire economic model and how it has failed and how it has been a lie. Gerald Salante, without question and without peer in what he does, will be my guest for the hour. Others coming up will be Chris Hedges. We will have the best of our progressive minds to take issue. Helen Caldicott will be here to take issue with our safe nuclear plans. So everywhere we've been told, trust fluoride, we'll show you why not. Trust our diet, we'll show you why it's an adulteration leading to disease. Trust the medicines you're taking, why should we? Trust the vaccines, they're safe and effective. No, they are not. Held to any actual gold standard. Trust in our system, the system that has caused the rape and pillage of the American middle class, that has looked with disdain and neglect upon 70% of its population? No. It is time that we took the fight to them, and that's where it starts today. I just want to let you know what's coming and the enormous amount of scholarship that we have been engaged in quietly to prepare for this issue. I can promise you I will be taking on the New York Times, I will be taking on the Washington Post, I'll be taking on ABC, NBC, CBS, the anchors. We intend to leave nothing that is considered sacred, objective, alone. We intend to show you how blatantly corrupt all of these organizations are when it comes to looking for the truth and where they align themselves. Let us begin, however, with something positive that we can do every single day. We'll talk about health issues. First and foremost, you've heard of acai, A-C-A-I. It's a fruit that comes from South America. It's very healthy. And now more and more studies are showing how it benefits us. It's very good for your heart, according to the newest study. In the peer-reviewed journal Nutrition Journal, quote, acai shows heart-healthy benefits, and it lowers cholesterol, improves metabolic syndrome, which means it lowers your risks if you're overweight or diabetic or pre-diabetic from having a heart attack. Quote, this is from the study. This was an open-label pilot study designed to explore the potential effects of acai and on diabetes and cardiovascular disease. So it is not the definitive study, but it's certainly one more. And you have to look at all of the studies and all the different areas, and you start seeing a whole puzzle coming together, that this is one of those superfoods that deserves this reputation. Now, for all the pregnant women or someone that you know who is pregnant, many times they do not take vitamin supplements. They're told, oh, you don't need them. Yes, you do. The British Medical Journal has an article showing that nutritional supplements reduce preeclampsia risk, and especially in poorer countries like Mexico. And also keep in mind, for those who are not aware of it, that the protective effects of just a multiple, we're not even talking about high potency, just a regular multiple nutritional supplement against preeclampsia, a serious condition characterized by high blood pressure and other abnormalities that can occur during pregnancy. B1, B2, B6, you know, vitamin C, vitamin E, L-arginine, niacin, folate. Nothing unique, but let's just make sure that all pregnant women have their vitamins. And by the way, my brother Stephen has been making sure that every single month, every single pregnant woman in the Dominican Republic has a multiple vitamin for free. And then look at statistics of all of the birth problems they had prior to implementing this program and how few they have by comparison today. It saved thousands of lives. So it does work. Now, some people believe, as I do, in fasting. I have an opportunity to fast probably a little more than the average person because I travel so much. I don't eat anything on an airplane. I won't compromise and eat in a regular restaurant. If the food is junk, I'm not going to put it in my body. I take powders with me, and as long as I have access to a juice or you know, clean water, I'm fine. But in effect, when you're not eating solid food, you're just juicing, you are fasting. And that's a good thing. Now, you have to know your system, and you have to know your metabolism, you have to know your needs, and you don't want to do it in a careless way, but done properly, periodic fasting, meaning one day per week, where you just have maybe a protein shake twice and juices, is good for you. Here's the latest on this, and lo and behold, it comes from Science Daily, the heart of mainstream medicine. This was from the Intermountain Medical Center Heart Institute, and it says the following. Routine periodic fasting is good for your health and your heart. Now, according to Science Daily, fasting has long been associated with religious rituals and diets and political protest. Now, they're saying new evidence. I would challenge that and say we have a lot of evidence in the scientific literature from cardiac researchers demonstrating that routine periodic fasting is good for your health and your heart. So, now, if you have heart disease, you're more likely to also suffer from diabetes or having inflammation in the arteries. You're also more likely to have elevated bad cholesterol. And both diabetes and elevated cholesterol are known risk factors for coronary heart disease. So in this group, they found that those who fasted on a regular basis had less heart disease, the leading cause of death among men and women in America. And it's published in the American College of Cardiology annual meeting. Quote, these new findings demonstrate that our original discovery was not a chance event, says Dr. Horn, director of the Cardiovascular and Genetic Epidemiology at the International Medical Center. You bet, and we didn't need a study to verify something that people all over the world have been doing for a long time, periodic fasting. Now, one of the things we have a problem with is the amount of salt in the American diet. It is way too elevated. So, here's the latest of why you should be very careful about the amount of salt in the diet. And if you want a good substitute for salt, let's say on a salad, how about taking some lemon and lime juice in equal amounts and put in some apple cider vinegar? That gives you a very nice taste, but also it satisfies that salty taste. It's because it's virtually identical to salt, but there's no sodium. And it's actually good for you because in both the lime and lemon is limonene, which is a nutrient that can help prevent damage to the DNA. It's anti-carcinogenic. So every time you have lemon juice, you're helping in a degree to a way of preventing cancer. That's why every time I get a juice, I stopped by a store yesterday in my travels, and there was a little restaurant, and they had a juice bar. Now, what was interesting, they were going to take the fruit right out of a bin and juice it. And I said, would you please wash that? Why? It's organic. I said, well, all the more reason to wash it. And I didn't want to give a whole class on hygiene, but I'd hate to think how many people ended up with food poisoning because of drinking an organic juice without having it washed. The rule is this. Wash everything that's going to go into your body unless it's been cooked. Because anything can be contaminated. Now, where are the three most contaminating places in your home or in a business? First and foremost, the countertops. Secondly, the handles of refrigerators. Third, the sponges that they use to clean things and then don't disinfect or clean the sponges. So every time you clean something with a sponge, like a sink, you've now contaminated the sink. So let's say you just put something in the sink, like a salad, and you're washing it. Do you wash on both the up and bottom part of the salad, or just kind of like they do in a restaurant, just give a quick run over? What about all that debris that's in there that could end up causing all forms of parasitic reactions and food poisoning? And by the way, we're talking about 100 million plus food poisonings a year. And one of the most common ways of getting food poisoning is people who handle the salads. That's why I don't eat salads out. So anyhow, the person washed and washed it thoroughly. The apples and the ginger and then the lemon. And I said, make it equal parts lemon to apple. I'm on a 16-ounce juice. They said, well, that's an awful lot of lemon. I said, yes, it is. Well, can you drink that amount? I could drink 16 ounces of straight lemon. I've drank 32 ounces of straight lemon juice. No sweetener, just as it is. I can handle that because my body's adapted to that. Well, why would you want that much? So then I gave him a whole discussion of what's in the lemon and how it's one of the most important healing foods and detoxifying foods and energizing foods you can put. And if you've been exposed to any parasites or bacteria, if you have any strep or staph in your throat and you go to take some lemon juice, if you have ginger with it, a little bit of raw honey, you've just done a great healing inside the body. Anyhow, back to the point, the Journal of Neuroscience now shows that elevated levels of sodium in the body blunt the response to stress. So just remember, all those salty snacks or french fries or potato chips, they're can be doing more than increasing your thirst. They could also be playing a role in suppressing hormone levels that your body actually needs. So just get rid of the sodium. And finally, there is still this question, are cell phones dangerous? The preponderance of information shows yes, they are. And there are now 33 studies that I have showing that they cause all forms of damage to the DNA, which then can lead to cancer. Here's just the latest, and this is from reported in Science Daily, and it's published in the research journal Andrologia. And here's what it says. Cell phone use may reduce male fertility, Australian-Canadian study shows. So for those couples trying to have a child, just understand that when you use a cell phone, it appears to increase the level of testosterone circulating in the body and also leads to low sperm quality and a decrease in fertility. So that was done at the Department of Pharmacology and Toxicology at Queen's University in Canada. So understand that it could be a big problem. Why? Because of the electromagnetic waves emanated by the cell phones can lead to a dual action on male hormone levels and fertility. And that's not good for you. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. People living all over the world and emailing every single day. And since we have no advertising and it's just word of mouth, I was called this morning just getting off a plane to do an interview and film an interview by Jason, who said that the Arbitrons just came in and we had a big uptick in our listeners. And when you consider how hard it is to get listeners to a station, since there's so many, and he says, if you go up and you type in on Google, Progressive Radio, we're number one out of 66 million searches and hits. Not bad. So I want to thank you. And when you send in ideas for programs and guests, we take all of that seriously and we review all of it. Now for our issue of the day. After this issue, please call in, and I'll give you the number to call in a second, and share your points of view. And I'm going to give you a couple to think about today, so you won't just have one, you'll have two. The first one is from Harvey Wasserman on Fukushima's apocalyptic threat demands global action now. Why do I think this is important, and why am I sharing this one today? Because ask the average American, what's going on in Japan? I don't know. They had an earthquake and a tsunami and some problems with the meltdown, but that's all behind them. I guess they fixed it. No, they haven't. They have fixed nothing. So we're going to give you the latest on that. And then I want to do a shorter one on the idea that our medical journals in the United States are making unsubstantiated claims. Your physicians use this to justify giving you medications. The FDA has chosen not to challenge them at all, and yet no vitamin maker in the United States can make any claims without being shut down. This is the kind of double standard that we have. Should we allow this? There'll be two comments. Now, first to the first one. I'll quote Harvey Wasserman. Fukushima may be an apocalyptic downward spiral. Forget the corporate-induced media coma that says otherwise, or nothing at all. Lethal radiation is spewing unabated. Emission levels could seriously escalate. There is no end in sight. The potential is many times worse than Chernobyl. Containing this disaster may be beyond the abilities of Tokyo Electric or the Japanese government. There is no reason to incur further unnecessary risk. We all needed resources. It's time for the world's best scientists and engineers to take charge. Even then, the outcome is unclear. For a brief but terrifying overview, consult Dr. Chris Busby. By the way, you can hear Dr. Busby on the archives because we interviewed him. Fukushima units 1, 2, and 3 are all in various stages of melting down today. Molten fuel at Unit 1 may have burned through its reactor pressure vessel with water poured in to cool it, merely pouring out the bottom. A growing pond of highly reactive liquid is softening the ground and draining into the ocean. There is no way to predict where these molten masses of fuel will go. Especially in the event of an aftershock, steam and hydrogen explosions could blow out what's left of the containments. The extra plutonium in the MOX fuel at Unit 3 is an added liability. At least one spent fuel pool has been on fire. The site has already suffered at least two hydrogen explosions. Some believe a fission explosion may have also occurred. All have weakened the structures and support systems on site. These shocks and the soft ground may be why Unit 4 has partially sunk and is tipping, possibly on the brink of collapse. Even a relatively minor aftershock could mean catastrophe. More explosions are possible. More leaks are virtually certain. Escalated radiation levels from any one of the reactors could force all workers to evacuate, leaving the entire site to chance. The New York Times has now reported the critical valve failures that contributed to the Fukushima disaster are likely at numerous U.S. reactors. Significant radioactive debris has been found thousands of yards from the plant. Radiation levels in Tokyo, 200 miles away, have risen. Fallout has been detected in North America and throughout Europe. Radiation pouring into the sea has begun to spread worldwide. There is much more, none of it good. Japan and Germany have had the good survival sense to abandon future reaction construction and to shut some existing sites down. But here the corporate media blackout is virtually complete. Out of sight, out of mind seems the strategy for an industry desperate for federal loan guarantees and continued operation of a rickety fleet of decaying old reactors. The Obama administration has ended radiation monitoring of seafood in the Pacific. It does not provide reliable, systematic radiological or medical data on fallout coming to the United States. But we are all in unprecedented danger. A national movement is underway to end atomic giveaways and turn to a green powered earth. Now we must all move the world's governments beyond denial to focus on somehow bringing Fukushima under control. After 2 months of all-out effort, 4 reactors and at least that many spent fuel pools remain at risk. Our survival depends upon stopping Fukushima from further irradiating us all. The world community has come together to put a new sarcophagus around Chernobyl. A parallel, more urgent effort now needs to focus on Fukushima. Whatever technical, scientific, and material resources are available to our species, that's what needs to go there and now. And that's from Harvey Wasserman. And by the way, I believe at the same time there should be an effort to stop genetic engineering altogether of all foods. This is just the latest. Quote, new research from Canada has found that BT toxin produced by genetically modified insect-resistant crops in the blood of women and clear evidence that it is passed into fetuses. Pesticides used on genetically modified herbicide-tolerant crops were also detected. And we're calling for an immediate halt to genetically modified BT crop cultivation and imports of BT genetically modified food and feed until the findings are properly evaluated and further study confirms product safety. Because right now, all that is going on in the United States. You're eating corn on the cob at this time of year. You're eating dairy. You're eating beef. The grains that were grown are almost 90% genetically modified. So you need to know that you should eat organic only. Otherwise, you could end up polluting yourself. And finally, this is important and is not discussed at all. This is from Washington. Quote, a set of confidential federal audits accused the nation's 5 largest mortgage companies of defrauding taxpayers in their handling of foreclosures on homes purchased with government-backed loans. 4 officials briefed on the findings told the Huffington Post. The 5 separate investigations were conducted by the Department of Housing and Urban Development's Inspector General and examined Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, and Ally Financial. The audits accused the 5 major lenders of violating the False Claims Act. That's a law crafted as a weapon against firms that swindle the government. The audits were completed in February. So here's my thoughts. Here are 5 of the most powerful corporations with gazillion lobbyists, former legislators on their payroll, former top people in governmental agencies of oversight. So none of them are being prosecuted. So they can get away with breaking the law, throwing millions of people out on the streets, profiting by getting 0 interest loans from the Federal Reserve, giving the Federal Reserve toxic assets, junk garbage assets as collateral, and then getting money at 0 interest and then charging you 800 to 3 or 4,000%. Remember, every credit card that you go delinquent on, every debit card you go delinquent on, they could charge you 1,000% interest. They're not halted at all. Why is it that we should have 1 set of laws and rules and ethics for those who are in power or have access to power and all the rest of us? If you went to a bank and said, I could buy this house. Okay, it's $100,000. What's your collateral? I have some old running shoes. Yeah. And you want to put your old running shoes up as collateral on a $100,000 house? Yeah, why not? Because your old running shoes are worth nothing. Okay, fine. Legitimate. Bank, I want $100 billion. What's your collateral? I'll give you some of the old mortgages that are worth nothing. Okay, we'll take it. And here's your money at 0 interest. That's what's happening. And both the Democrats and Republicans have encouraged it and allowed it and protected it. We, the public, should have a voice in it. Your thoughts. Those are our issues of the day. I'm going to go to my guest right after we speak with you and you have a chance to share your points of view. Call now 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, on the genetically modified food, just keep this in mind. Virtually all the political appointments by the last in this administration, and even going back to the Clinton administration, have been to have individuals oversee the safety of our food coming directly from the genetic modifying companies themselves. And then they would go back into that company and then come back into federal government, like Michael Taylor. At no time, even though on repeated occasions we have submitted lists of qualified individuals to oversee food safety, were any of those considered. Every single appointment, without exception, is always a political insider with economic interest at stake. At what point do we say, enough of this? Our food has not been tested for safety. There are no long-term human studies on any genetically modified food whatsoever. I know that for a fact. I'm doing a major documentary as we speak. I've been filming around the world, just finished filming in India, on genetically modified food. And by the way, over 200,000 farmers there have committed suicide because they went broke using genetically modified cotton, and they drank the pesticide that they were putting on their crops as a final protest against Monsanto and the other companies. And yet our administration doesn't care about these farmers, doesn't care about the American farmer, but boy do they care about those who give them political campaign donations. Your thoughts? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Turn to speak out. Let's say hello to John from Manhattan. Hi, John.
Gary, I'd like to thank you, first of all, for taking this call, and thank you for also opening, I will say, our eyes when it comes to dealing with this fraud that banks are these days, or always have been. And I'd like to ask you, do you have any recommendations about what banks to deal with when it comes to doing business, because I know you have information that most of us don't have.
Yes, I'd be happy to share it. But keep in mind, I don't believe that just giving opinions matter as such. It was Walter Raleigh who said, it is not truth but opinion that can travel the world without a passport. Or better still, Lawrence Peter, who said, when I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. So let us go from opinion, which is completely subjective, to substantiated fact. Contact your bank and ask them for their annual report and see their position on derivatives, credit default swaps, the load of debt that they're handling, and the type of services that they offer and what they charge for those services. Also see what percentage of their portfolio they have been engaged in defaults on mortgages and repossessions. Right now, there is an enormous hidden story that the American public is not aware of. I was sitting on a plane recently, which is just about every day, and a person sitting beside me, who didn't know me, was looking at what I was writing and said, and just saw the title of the article and said, "That's interesting." And I said, "What do you do?" And this person says, "Well, I'm in the real estate business." And I asked them their opinion, and they thought that it was a great time to buy and great deals. And I said, "Okay, let's say that you could go out right now and you can buy a house." And the original price of the house was $300,000, and now it's $250,000. So you've saved $50,000. Would that be a good deal? He said, "Yeah, that'd be a good deal." But he said, "I can even get better deals. I could get them, let's say, originally $300,000. I could get it for $200,000. I said, "Fair enough." I said, "That's assuming that the market is completely collapsed. Do you have any idea how many of those foreclosed homes have been kept off the market? Banks are simply holding them? Because if you put all the homes on the market right now that have been foreclosed on, that are empty, the banks own, you would drop the price of the existing real estate down by almost 50%. So then, buying a home at $200,000 that was once $300,000 is now worth $100,000, you've just lost $100,000. And you'll never make that back because there's not going to be another real estate bubble. You have been wiped out." I said, "So until such time that we know exactly what a bank's holding, all banks are holding, and also many banks are going to auctions and buying back their own homes at pennies on the dollar so they can turn around and put it back into inventory, in effect, double dipping. They made the money first time around, now they're going to make it a second time around." So this is the corruption within the banking system, part of the corruption. Also, all those fees that the banks make on every transaction, $7 billion thus far this year was made on ATM fees. You don't realize how much you're charged every time you put money in or take money out. Every time a bank pays a bill for you, you think it's a good thing, you're charged for that. And yet they've tried to make it seem as if we'll pay your gas bill, your electric bill, your mortgage, we'll pay your rent, we'll pay it all for you. Yes, they will, and do a pretty good job for a fee. A lot more than what it would cost you to put a stamp on an envelope and fill out the check and send it yourself. So therefore, look to see if these are the major banks that are making money in the casino industry. Meaning, let me put this as simple as I can. You have two types of banks and credit institutions. One that is a savings and loan. They can't give much of an interest because the interest is at zero. Therefore, you're not going to make anything on your savings account. So people think, "Oh, I better put my money where I can make a greater return." I say don't do that. At this time, it's not important what you make on your return. It's what you save on your principal. I would rather make zero interest and protect my principal than to risk in any kind of bond that could end up going broke out there. And right now, there are no such things as an absolutely 100% safe investment. Even governments are collapsing and defaulting, as we saw in Iceland, as we're likely to see in Portugal and Greece and Ireland in the near future, because there's a certain point where the banks get all the money through a structured loan repayment from the International Monetary Fund that came and gave them a certain amount of money, but a lot of the money they gave went to the banks. So the very people caused the crisis then call for the International Monetary Fund to come in and give them bailouts, so they get the bailout, but then they're stuck giving away their pensions, giving up their retirement, giving up their health plans. The public has to make all the sacrifices on its side. The banks make none on their side. The system is utterly corrupt. And only when the youth and the progressives go to the street and challenge the government, as they've done in the Middle East for food and jobs, and the Western countries for their assets that have depreciated and their pensions and social safety net that's being deconstructed. All the while, the banks got richer. and the culprit behind it, and the person really behind it, is the head of the Federal Reserve. Now, then there are the banks that will make money based upon making sure that a corporation is always profitable. Turn on any of the talking head shows, MSNBC or CNBC or Fox Business Channel, and what they're talking about is buy this one today because they're showing better earnings, and don't buy that because they don't have strong earnings. And this one looks like it's going to be acquired by this one, so buy that one. But that one, you know, they're having some problems over there in growth, so don't buy them. What it means is today, in order to be in a trade on Wall Street and keep the value of your stock up and hence your stockholders happy in buying, and especially your institutional buyers, you have to be extremely ruthless. You cannot care about the workers. Downsize them. You can't care about the quality of your product. Make it as cheaply as possible anywhere in the world you can. Hence the excess jobs and companies going to China, Bangladesh, India, where quality control is substantially less than in the United States. And then bring it back. And look at all the bad products that have been brought back in from these countries that were recalled, but think of 100 times more that were not recalled that we didn't know about. So now it's no longer good enough to be a well-run company creating a good product that is made at the highest quality here in America. That is virtually irrelevant. All Wall Street cares about is profits. Profits. So anything that will increase profits, deregulate. Let's not put in those stupid smokestack catalytic converters. Let's just let that pollution go right into the ocean, right into the river, right into the air. That saves us money, which means our bottom line is better. So that is what is happening. So the old idea to make a good quality product, stand behind it, and don't consider that growth and large growth or rapid growth is what is important, but simply slow down and just be sustainable. That is a completely antiquated concept in the minds of those controlling the market. You've got to be able to look at your bank and see, are they supporting renewable energies? Are they supporting small business people in doing quality businesses? Or is it all about casino capitalism? Pull your money out of all banks, engage in casino capitalism, put them in savings loans, small savings loans, study their balance sheets, and therefore you'll be protected. Okay? All the best to you. We're going to go to our guests in one moment. I just want to take one more call. We had a full line there. Let's just say hello to, who do we have here? John from Long Island.
Hi, Gary. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to say really quickly, right now we're talking about Japan, and it's a crucial issue. Hopefully this negative will turn into a positive and people will see the light, and we will ban all nuclear energy because of this event. But the controlled media, of course, is interfering. The other thing I wanted to say is right now in the Mississippi, a few days ago, there was a leak. Whether or not it was intentional or not, I don't know. But notice how the media is not reporting it. And all the secondary and non-primary media are trying to attempt to get this message out. And my point is that, you know, we've got issues right here in our backyard. Now, notice how everyone's talking about the Mississippi's overflooding, but they're not talking about the fact that nuclear waste has been accidentally spilled into the Mississippi. Now, on a broader perspective, if you really look at what's going on, the people who control our world, the shadow government, they're not that stupid. There's an agenda. It's enslavement. How do you keep people enslaved? Well, you dumb them down. You don't give them education. You attempt, there's also an agenda, it started in 1954, to diminish the world's population. So my point is this has all been orchestrated. This has all been planned. And we need to take our government over, and these people need to be tried and hung on the steps of the Capitol, which is
okay.
Something.
So that's. Let's rephrase this without the anger, all right? I don't hold people accountable for what they say when they're angry, and I understand your anger, but we're not going to hang anyone. We are not a Robespierrean court. We believe in due process. We believe in giving people an opportunity in any circumstance to defend themselves as you would want for yourself. We are not a mob. We're not out looking to take anyone that we perceive as being responsible for our problems and engage in a hate campaign. We're coming from a peaceful, loving place, but we're still determined. Now, I wouldn't say that anyone's trying to enslave us Instead, I would say that they are determined to profit at this off of us, at the same time controlling how we respond to them and how we respond to the conditions that we are living in. If you can get people to adapt to the conditions, adapt to the media, adapt to their so-called truths, then they are a slave at one level, in that they're not going to even understand how much power they have. They've given their process of thinking, process of actualizing, process of change to a relatively small group of people who will make those decisions for them. We're trying to get people to take back these decisions and put people who are more enlightened, more humanistic, more spiritual, and more caring and inclusive to give them those choices. The other people have had that opportunity, and they have blown it. So I understand your anger, but please temper the anger and so you don't marginalize the contempt you have for the corruption that is so palpable. Thank you. One last call. Remember, we have a three-hour special day, so our guests will go into our next hour. Let's say hello to Sean from New York. Hi, Sean. You're on the air. Sean, you're on the air. Please speak up.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Sean, yes.
I want to thank you. I thought you said Sean. I didn't know I was on. I want to thank you for the incredible job. I only just recently started listening to WBAI in your show, and it's so heartwarming to hear someone who knows what's going on in all facets of our life, from the health to the political to the economic, and I can't tell you how refreshing it is. And heartwarming that I want you to keep up the great work. And I do go to your store occasionally when I'm in the area. What I want to tell you is one of the things is that on the CBC website now, it has a section for the zombie apocalypse. This is what our government, this pseudo-legitimate part of the government says, is talking about, warning us about zombie apocalypse. If you can imagine that. Now, I know you know how corrupt the CDC is, but to go to such lengths is horrific.
Well, I think you've misunderstood the metaphor. Let me put it in a little different perspective. We had what was called zombie economics and zombie banks. A zombie bank is a bank that is bankrupt but continues to function and should have gone through a structured takeover by the FDIC, its officers and directors let go, and restructured and protect the investment of the savings loan holders in the bank. We have that now in several industries. For example, if you or I, if we cannot pay our bills and if we cannot garner a public flow in to support us, we go bankrupt. We lose our savings. The zombie economy are those major corporations, including Wall Street firms, that are virtually insolvent based upon the positions they've taken on derivatives, credit default swaps, and the actual cash reserves they have. And yet they're allowed to continue functioning and giving profits to their investors and bonuses to themselves because what is off-sheet is not considered at all. So that's one of the reasons that they use that term. Thank you very much, Sean. We're going to go to our guest in just a second here, but please remember we have a three-hour special today. My guest will have lots of time to talk. I just want to address Mark Levin. I have no problem with Mark Levin, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, Bill O'Reilly, and all the other people who have a particular point of view. They have a right to that point of view. In fact, sometimes they actually will say something that I could agree with. Not often, but they do. So it's not that that I have an issue with. I have an issue, however, when they're inaccurate or they give only half of the truth. There's an old Jewish saying, a half truth is a full lie. Last evening when I was traveling back from an airport in a cab, the driver had on Fox News and I was listening to Mark Levin, and he went on this rant about how, you know, President Obama has, you know, selling out the most important friends we have, the only democracy in the Middle East, Israel, and there should only be one state, the Jewish state, and that the Muslims, the Palestinians, have no right to be there. They have no historical precedent there. And then he gave a very superficial but actually accurate overview of the Jews' right to Jerusalem. And his statements in that context I would not disagree with. It's what he left out of it. He clearly left out that the Muslims had no right to Jerusalem or even to be living there at all. Just to set the record straight, from multiple scholars around the world, let's go back, Mark, into just a little authentic history. The siege of Jerusalem in 614, after 21 days of relentless siege warfare, Jerusalem was captured. The Sassanid army, the Muslim army, and the Jews together slaughtered tens of thousands of Christians in the city, an episode which has been hotly debated by historians. The conquered city would remain Muslim for 15 years until the Byzantine emperor, Heraclius, conquered it in 629. Then Jerusalem is considered Islam's third holiest city. Now, you should have put that in context. Yes, Mecca is number one and Medina is number two, but Jerusalem is number three. And among Muslims of the earliest era, it was referred to as the Madinat Bayt al-Maqut, which is the city of the temple, which was restricted to the Temple Mount. The Islamization of Jerusalem began in the first year AH, 620 CE, when Muslims were instructed to face the city while performing their daily prostrations, and according to Muslim religious traditions, Muhammad's night journey and ascension to heaven took place. And after 16 months, the direction of the prayer was changed to Mecca. In 638, the Islamic Caliphate extended its dominion to Jerusalem. With the Arab conquest, Jews were allowed back into the city. And the Rashidun Caliph, Omar Khattab, signed a treaty with the Monophysite Christian Patriarch, Sophronius, assuring him that Jerusalem's Christian holy place and population would be protected under Muslim rule. And in 1099, the Fatimid, the Muslim ruler, expelled the native Christian population before Jerusalem was conquered by the Crusaders, who massacred most of the Jewish and Muslim inhabitants when they took the solidly defended city by assault. And after a period of siege, later the Crusaders created the Kingdom of Jerusalem. And by early June 1099, Jerusalem's population had declined from 70,000 to less than 30,000. In 1187, the city was wrested from the Crusaders by Saladin, who permitted Jews and Muslims to return and settle in the city. And under the Ayyubid dynasty of Saladin, a period of huge investment began in the construction of houses and markets and hostels, as well as religious endowments. However, for most of the 13th centuries, and in 1244, Jerusalem was sacked by the Tartars, like a Mongol hordes that came after out of the steppes of the Caucasus in Russia, who decimated the city's Christian population, drove out the Jews. And the Tartars were driven out in 1247. And from 1250 to 1517, Jerusalem was ruled by the Mamluks, which was an Egyptian Muslim dynasty. And during this period of time, many clashes occurred between the Mamluks on one side and the Crusaders and the Mongols on the other side, and the area also suffered many earthquakes and the Black Plague. And in 1517, Jerusalem and the environs fell to the Ottoman Turks, who remained in control until 1917. And Jerusalem enjoyed a prosperous period of renewal and peace under the rule, and it also engaged in the rebuilding of the magnificent walls around the old city. And the Ottomans brought many innovations. They brought a postal system. They brought in all the consulates, the use of the wheel for modes of transportation, the stagecoach carriage, and all these other things. And also, the Ottoman rule was in 1831, there was the annexation of Jerusalem by the Muhammad Ali of Egypt. The foreign missions and consulates began to establish a foothold in the city. And then in 1917, after the Battle of Jerusalem, the British army led by General Allenby conquered the city. And in 1922, the League of Nations at the Conference of Lausanne entrusted the United Kingdom to administer the Mandate for Palestine and the neighboring Mandate for Transjordan to the east across the River Jordan and the Iraq Mandate beyond it. From 1922 to 1948, the total population of the city rose from 52,000 to 165,000, with two-thirds of Jews and one-third of Arabs. And the situation between Arabs and Jews in Palestine was not quiet. In Jerusalem in particular, riots occurred in 1920, 1929, and other British new garden suburbs were built in the western and northern parts of the city, and institutions of higher education became, for example, Hebrew University was founded. So to leave all of this out, Mark, is to do a disservice to a true understanding of the relationships between Muslims and Jews in Jerusalem. And it is my belief that only when there is a two-state where both Jews and Muslims can live in peace and harmony, side by side, with no form of limitation on their rights to advance and to live a quality of life, will there be peace? Those are my own particular points of view. I'm Gary Knoll, back in a moment with our guest. Please stay with us.
The Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.